Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. As night fell Friday, Kurdish Peshmerga tanks fired heavy artillery into the now Iraqi-held town of Altan Kapri, while gunfire cracked at the town's entrance. Kurdish civilian volunteers scattered from behind a nearby berm as journalists' cars raced out of the line of fire. Iraqi and Kurdish forces have been battling since early morning after Iraqi forces advanced north out of Kirkuk, an oil city that took over in the past week toward the Kurdish capital, Erbil. The United Nations said Friday that 589 Rohingya refugees have fled Myanmar to Bangladesh since August 25th. Spokesman Farhan Haq told reporters that just over half of them are staying at a large site where aid partners are working to improve basic services, infrastructure, and road access. Michael Dunford is World Foods Program Emergency Coordinator.
WFP's already fed 580,000 refugees. Just yesterday, we fed an additional 10,000 as they came across the border. But we're still scaling up. We still need to reach up to 1 million people. We've received strong support from our donors, but we need an additional 54 million to get us through until the end of February if we are able to reach our target.
Thousands of Somalis gathered Friday to pray at the site of the country's deadliest bombing last Saturday when a truck bomb exploded on a busy street in Mogadishu, killing what is now believed to be 358 people. Somalis in the capital city paid their respects, and the Somali prime minister said that the president will be declaring war on the extremist. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis went to Capitol Hill Friday to meet with Senator John McCain after the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee threatened to issue a subpoena for information about the deaths of four U.S. soldiers killed in Niger. After meeting privately with McCain in his office Friday, Mattis promised to keep better lines of communication with Congress. McCain said that the meeting helped clear up the information channels. Earlier this week, McCain threatened to use the subpoena to compel information from the Pentagon and Trump administration officials about the Niger attack. Officials in Afghanistan say that a suicide blast inside a crowded mosque in Kabul has killed at least 40 worshippers. IS goal has more.
It was, in fact, a crowded mosque for Shiite Muslims, where a suicide bomber just walked in and blew himself up. And there are dozens of people seriously wounded, according to the Afghan Interior Ministry. And in fact, what we are hearing right now is that there were two attackers. And as soon as the first one blew himself up, there was a second attacker. He was armed with automatic weapons, and he started shooting at the crowd.
Another attack in Ghor province killed at least 33 people. At least 30 Egyptian policemen have been killed in a shootout with militants in the country's western district. Security officials say that the policemen came under fire as they were searching for suspected members of Hassam, a group that has claimed responsibility for attacks in Egypt during the past year. The official said eight other security personnel were also wounded in the attack, which took place in about 135 kilometers southwest of Cairo. A search and rescue operation has been underway in northwestern Malaysian state of Penang following a deadly landslide Saturday. Dozens of rescue workers, some carrying stretchers, combed the construction site where that landslide hit. State news agency reports that three deaths and nearly a dozen people are believed to be buried already. A team of international scientists now say that the Nobel Prize-winning poet Pablo Neruda did not die of cancer or malnutrition, rejecting the official cause of death but not laying to rest one of the great mysteries of the post-coup in Chile. The expert says that they are waiting now to be able to establish the origin of bacteria that they found in his body. Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest. Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington.
There's a lot of despondency and questions are being asked. What criteria the WHO has been using, has used to appoint this man as a goodwill ambassador?
Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe becomes the new goodwill ambassador for the World Health Organization.
I do not see how the president can be kind of blocked of responsibility insofar as the police remain an organ of the executive. I think that there must be, at the very least, some political responsibility that should attach to his office.
The Malawian Law Society calls on President Mutharika to take action to end the ongoing blood-sucking-related deaths.
It is really regrettable that the government can cancel such a demonstration that was bringing us up to say to the government that we support these people who are actually claiming for something which is right. I do not mean the cessation. I mean the teacher and then the lawyer trade union.
And the Cameroonian government cancels a planned protest Saturday. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Human rights groups have criticized the choice of Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe as the goodwill ambassador for the World Health Organization, or WHO. An official from the WHO says Mugabe was chosen because the Southern African country places universal health coverage and health promotion at the center of its policies to provide health care to all Zimbabweans. But critics say Mugabe's appointment is not appropriate after saying the Zimbabwean leader has a poor human rights record. For reaction, I read Rejoice Ngwenya, a political analyst in the Zimbabwean capital, Harare.
Ordinarily, when your president has been appointed goodwill ambassador for anything, the nation must be embroiled in an orgy of frenzied celebration. But it would seem that in our case, it is extremely the opposite, where there is obviously a lot of questions and comments that perhaps the WHO is not talking about the Zimbabwe that we know. So there's a lot of despondency and questions are being asked. What criteria the WHO has used to appoint this man as a goodwill ambassador?
Well, some are saying that he has the experience, he has been on the international stage for a long time, people listen to him, and that being a goodwill ambassador would help in promoting good health, which they understand Mr. Mugabe has been doing for all these years, despite some opposition to his politics.
This is it. You know, goodwill is very negative. It has to do with the positive aspects of a brand, you know, of reputation and all that. Now, demagoguery and populism is not necessarily goodwill. Now, if you are going to be appointed a goodwill for health, the first thing that Zimbabweans ask, what is the state of health in your own country? And the state of health delivery in this country is very, very bad. He himself does not even believe in the goodwill of health delivery in his country. Peter, this is why when the man has a simple cataract problem, a headache and a toothache, he takes the first flight to Hong Kong. So while the categories of good ambassadors can be, you know, interpreted differently, what Zimbabweans are saying, including myself, is that our state of health does not reflect leadership that has a capacity and the propensity to represent anybody, because you can only represent the African health system if you can prove that your country has set very high standards in health service delivery.
Well, human rights groups are criticizing President Mugabe, but his supporters are saying that these are politically motivated just to tarnish his reputation.
Well, I mean, if Mugabe is being appointed a WHO goodwill ambassador for health or whatever diseases, it is on the basis of his political history, not academic or medical or technical history. So politics has played a role in building up his brand, whether positive or negative. So when opposition parties are complaining that his political brand goodwill is negative, so they have a right, because WHO is also using his political credibility. So the basics of our complaint are very, very clear. We are saying we don't understand why a man whose country, the health delivery, has no goodwill. We don't care much about his popularity in other African countries where they consider his land reform as a good thing. We are saying, as Zimbabweans, we are very, very unhappy about our state of health delivery.
The WHO spokesman Christian Ledmeyer said the WHO chief was seeking broad support for the agency's work. The director general of the WHO is also saying that President Mugabe can use his influence with some of these African leaders. You don't agree with that? Why?
Of course, I don't agree, because I am saying that for you to have a critical leverage of influence, you have to get into a situation where you can use your own country as an example of excellence. So if African leaders can listen to Mugabe on matters other to do with democracy and governance, they will probably be asking questions, what is the state of democracy and governance in Zimbabwe? If African continent leaders have to listen to Mugabe about on the message of health delivery and non-communicable diseases, they will ask, Mr. President, what is the state of health delivery in your country? So all these are reflecting negative indexes. So if the WHO is, like I said, using demagoguery and populism, yes, they found the right person, because he's a person who can harangue the crowd and get standing ovation. But the issue of health delivery is not just about standing ovation and demagoguery. It's real life.
Rejoice Ingwenya is a Zimbabwean political analyst. He spoke with me from Harare. The leader of the Malawian Law Society has called on President Arthur Peter Mutharika to ensure innocent citizens are protected from being killed on suspicion of involvement in the blood-sucking ritual. This after at least 10 people were reportedly killed, allegedly for participating in the blood-sucking ritual. Recently, there has been a surge of vigilante justice targeting people suspected of involvement in the so-called blood-sucking practices. In a statement, Kumbo Soko warned that if nothing is done, the country risks drifting into anarchy. The Law Society leader told me that there is need for decisive action to prevent more deaths.
There are two sides to this issue. The first one is, of course, the belief aspect. And I think, in fairness to the president and the executive, there's not much the government can do to control what people believe. We are in such a part of the world where belief in witchcraft and this kind of thing kind of very powerful and important. But where our concern arises is that this is fast becoming a law enforcement issue, to the extent that you have people who are losing their lives, property is getting damaged on the basis, like I said, without any evidence whatsoever that they are involved in these practices. That, I think, becomes a law enforcement issue, which engages the responsibility of the executive to ensure that steps are taken to protect life and property, and that's what our intervention today was all about.
Supporters of the government are saying that since this is a law enforcement issue, the Constitution mandates the police to ensure protection of life and property, and that your request should be made to the police rather than to the executive. What do you say to that?
In our statement, we've made it clear that it's the duty of the executive and all of its law enforcement agencies, among which the Malawi Police Service number, to ensure that there is a protection of life and property. I do not see how the president can be entirely absorbed of responsibilities insofar as the police remain an organ of the executive. I think that there must be, at the very least, some political responsibility that should attach to his office. These are very serious issues. It's a public emergency. People are losing their lives. And I think that it's a moment that calls for decisive leadership.
During his recent tour of affected district last week, President Mutharika said he would leave the matter to Paramount Chief Ngulenguliwa of Thilo as it is related to witchcraft. Some of your members sharply disagree. Why?
I don't know within the context that the president made those remarks, whether they were in jest or meant to be taken literally. I'm not entirely certain. But here's the thing. Our laws do proceed on the basis that witchcraft does not exist, and to that extent, any claims to such kind of practices or even an accusation leveled against anybody that is practicing witchcraft is in itself a criminal offense that is punishable, by a fine. So you had a very bizarre situation where a chief stood on a podium at a rally that was being addressed by the president. The president said, "Look, we're going to deal with this thing, using magic or using the practice of witchcraft, which the law itself declares to be, to be non-existent, and which." The law itself says that if you make the declaration, you are, in essence, committing a criminal offense. So it's a law enforcement issue, like I'm saying, to the extent that you have people getting murdered and people are getting damaged, and you really can't say that I'm going to leave it to judicial authority to deal with it in a manner which in itself would suggest that the law is also being violated.
Some are saying that this issue required prompt and decisive response from the government to serve as a deterrent, among other issues. Do you subscribe to this assessment?
Well, I do. I mean, look, in all fairness, I think, the police, and the other law enforcement agencies have been rather slow in coming to the party. Because, these things have been around for quite a while now. I think we are now into third, if not the fourth week. And I think it's only been within the last 24 hours or so that I've seen some very serious mobilization of law enforcement agents patrolling the streets and effecting arrests of people who have been going about engaging in these acts of vigilante justice. And we wish that we had seen those kind of interventions sooner, because as I've already said, as of yesterday, we had lost about 9 people to this kind of mob. Mob activities, and I think it shouldn't have taken us that long to see this kind of very decisive intervention on the part of the state.
Kumbo Soko is the leader of the Malawian Law Society. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. The Cameroonian government has cancelled a planned protest Saturday organised by the main opposition party, the Social Democratic Front, or SDF. The protest, organisers say, was meant to raise concerns about the ongoing crisis in the English-speaking parts of the country. The opposition party called on the administration in Yaoundé to resolve concerns of teachers and lawyers which led to the Anglophone crisis. But the government says it had intelligence that separatists were going to hijack the protest to create chaos and violence. For reaction regarding the cancellation of the protest, I reached opposition Senator Herman Paul from the Social Democratic Front, SDF, in the commercial capital, Douala.
I deeply regret the act of the government, because I think there is a situation that is going on in the English-speaking areas of the country. So what we from the opposition party, the SDF, feel is that the problem is not only that of the Anglophone people, because this problem concerns all of us in Cameroon, because the two English-speaking areas are part of our nation. So it is really regrettable that the government can cancel such a demonstration that was bringing us up to say to the government that we support these people who are actually claiming for something which is right. I do not mean the secession. I mean the teacher and then the lawyer trade union.
The information minister, Issa Chiroma Bakari, is of the opinion that the demonstration could create tension, and secessionist agitators could take this as an opportunity to destabilize the country. So this is a move the government is doing, according to him, to protect life and property. What do you say to that?
No, I do not agree with him. If this was a demonstration to disrupt the country, we could have not gone to put in a declaration for the public manifestation. I think the regional president of the SDF here in Douala actually issued a declaration, and then the government has signed it. So it was up to this regional president to take care of everything that could come up, not the minister.
So what is your next plan now that the government has decided demonstrations scheduled for Saturday will not come on? What is your next line of action? Because this concerns that opponents have raised are not just going to go away.
Normally, we are supposed to consult with the members of the party here in the littoral and also with the National Bureau of our political party before we can take the next step, maybe into declaration or maybe addressing a letter to the government. But for the meantime, I cannot give you any upcoming step that we can take at this moment as an individual.
Critics of the SDF who are saying that the SDF, the biggest opposition party in Cameroon, has not done enough to force the government or pressure the government to address concerns that you have raised, and that the demonstration that you planned for Saturday was just a mere exercise, knowing very well that the government will cancel it, fearing that secessionist agitators, as the government describes them, will take advantage and put more pressure on the government. How do you react to that?
Well, I think it depends on who do you have this type of information from, because as far as we from the opposition party and in the main opposition party, the SDF, are concerned, we draw the attention of the government on this ongoing crisis in the Anglophone-speaking area since November 2016. So as they did not take any steps, that's when you see all the trouble that we are facing now have come. But the SDF early drew the attention of the government since November 2016. I think we are currently going closer to November 2017, which is 1 year that we have been drawing the attention of the government on it. So I think that the argument of we did not do enough is not true.
People in the English-speaking areas are saying they want dialogue with the government. The government, recently led by President Paul Biya, said they are interested in dialogue. So why hasn't this dialogue without preconditions happened so far? And what role can the SDF play to bring these two opposing sides to resolve this concern?
I think at this moment, if the government wants to go on with a plan to negotiate with these people, it would be also a good opportunity for the government to consult with these political leaders, consult with the religious authorities, being them Muslim or Christian, consult also with the traditional rulers who are there, consult with the representative of the civil society before undertaking this type of step.
Harman Paul is a senator from the Cameroonian Opposition Social Democratic Front, or SDF. He spoke with me from Douala. Tanzanian opposition parliamentarian Zitto Kabwe is accusing the ruling Chama Pinduzi Party, or CCM, of luring supporters to defect. The lawmaker also said the government is against dissent, harassing opponents and suppressing press freedom. His comment came after the main opposition party, or Chadema, accused the ruling party of supposedly buying prominent members of the group to defect to the CCM. For reaction, I reached Humphrey Polepole, publicity secretary for the Tanzanian ruling party, the CCM, in the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam.
This guy, he should ask himself what went wrong with his leadership in his party, rather than accusing other people who are far away from him of accusations that don't make sense at all. He should ask himself what went wrong in the first place in his own party. And I'm telling him that there are more people from his party that would like to join Chama Chama Pinduzi because of his dictatorial attitude, disrespecting fellow leaders in his party, not being open to opinions, and especially those that are criticizing his position,
There are concerns by the opposition saying that the president, who is a leader of the ruling party, CCM, is behaving dictatorially, and that when criticisms of such are raised, folks, supporters and leaders like you come out defending the president. So why is his leadership in question when the president, President John Pombe Magufuli, is doing a similar thing?
Comrade John Pombe Magufuli, president of the United Republic of Tanzania, is pretty much doing what Mwalimu Nyerere and Kwame Nkrumah had foreseen. Their mission, Mwalimu and Kwame Nkrumah, of liberating the continent of Africa economically had not been fulfilled by the time Mwalimu passed on, and even earlier when Kwame passed on. President Magufuli is demanding that Tanzania has a fair share when it comes to minerals and the mineral business, gold, diamond, tanzanite. If Magufuli wants a fair share of Tanzania when it comes to mining, if that is dictatorial, then Tanzanians surely want that kind of a dictator. If Tanzanians want corruption to be completely wiped out in Tanzania, and Magufuli has been on the frontline person, fighting corruption, if that has been dictatorial, I am sure Ghanaians would have wanted that kind of a dictator.
Tundu Lissu, a prominent member of the opposition party, the president of Tanganyika Law Society, an avowed critic of the president, by the way, was recently nearly assassinated. You know, his car was riddled with bullets. He's now recovering following treatment in Kenya, although he got initial treatment from Tanzania. What is the government position on this? Because there are concerns that there is no security if assailants could just walk up to a parliamentarian and try to kill them.
Well, what I can say is, in every country, citizens have a duty to protect themselves. It is their fundamental duty. That is not different in Tanzania. And bad people are everywhere. Even in the U.S., a couple of days ago, some guy went out on a shooting spree and killed, tens of people. So these things happen. It is our duty. One, as a political party that has been entrusted with governing the country of Tanzania right now, but also the government of Tanzania, to strengthen, measures to protect our people. But we cannot say when an incident like this happens once, it has never happened before, then we've not done better. Incidences like this happen. They happen in the U.S., and it's unfortunate that it happened in Tanzania this time around to this member of parliament. But the government and the police force has wanted to follow up on this matter. But surprisingly, the family or the political party that this member of parliament belonged to have declined to offer cooperation so that the police force can follow up on this matter. As you are aware, that when this incident happened, the driver of this member of parliament, ran away. And the rule everywhere in the world would have been this guy's safest refuge would have been to the police force, where he would have reported the matter, and the police would have had a better clue of what had happened. But this guy has been, he ran away. And leaders of this political party have been with this driver in Nairobi, Kenya, and they have not been able to get this guy to report the matter to the police. That's interesting. You do not expect the police force to work in an angelic manner, that we would know the assailant without the help of the principal witness that was when the incident happened.
Humphrey Polepole is the publicity secretary for the Tanzanian ruling party, Chama cha Mapinduzi, or CCM. He spoke with me from Dar es Salaam. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent.
When the going gets tough, the tough must get going.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
When freedom of expression becomes a target of suppression, opposition becomes our position.
Kuba, 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 ya manya kwetokuwa. Dari kuteka mchengo, dari kuteka mchengo. Okay, well, mati yetapola byachikwangala ngaya mukana ebyokurana ngabo mukubetama akuchusiza dala aya ukana nyo kubabubuka balala ngaya mukana bawali nguli nenjaga ngaya manya Sange kanisa ngayone kaneka Mambite ya chimanyanti yali ya chikwangala Pasta yali muyaye nganonyo za mata Namu ikirizo kusikano kukaba Ntiamu wesenta genda yamba wajagana Mbaya kuna sente nazi Alina pasta kwa samu chitibwa Yafuka muya iye nenja yukatia jinywa Ayokeraru ya iye nemuchi ya yejasula Hala muito muya iye tebyechi ya yebyakola Na yaba itaba ya iye kubate wakola vyebabuli Sanga yali kami uche ya baku siwa siwa wafuka muya iye nenja yukatio jinywa kukeranu ya iye nemuchi ya yedosula ama kuito muya iye temechi ya yedokona chitufu le mama ya iye kubate wakule watu kusula ya kagombe anti anti kuno mukwano echi womereze chisukako kubo mukwano kuno kwa tabu wakonta jogera chimu labu labu oh 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 opa monsingala debio kola bintabula oya galanta tule okay yasala wono mutima guna Nenzikiriza nebyange byonna Kugabira omukwano guna Eno labu yange liya tapu Ne wate yoku chuse chuse kuteke teke Mubya labu kupule pule oh, oh. Bitomu tapta Avunula labu Zekuite my lover Chitegera Buli chitundu kunzi China chichogera juli Tunula mu maso gange Enolab bitomo kapta Mabunu na labu Na sala wono mutima guna Nenzikiriza nebyange byona Kugabiro mkwano guna Neno labu yangiri ya tabu Ni wate yoku chuse chuse kuteke teke
Chingale, chino tu chingale, jira tu chingale, we jira tu chingale, chino tu chingale, jira tu chingale, we.
You have been far away, ngomoti magulu maguluma, ngabuli rwene sunga kwateko, ngabiba biroto mwemba.
Lava what to say, not ever make a kulo say. Makulama to know I know any mama. Mumuana Mudiana, Michawa Michova, then they may young one. Oh, Jem and Nasiana, they don't tell him.
Don't you worry.
Jira tu chingale, chino tu chingale, jira tu chingale, we. Chino tu chingale, jira tu chingale, we.
Mwenye 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 abaloga, abagamba ntitwete. Zenefuna mwana wababa, simu gata na mikunju. Tukende mga wendi, ya waka sitayo, sekasta olinange. Bulichimu tusangeyo.
Yenganda vienyabo, ngeviokola vienji, nzeto menye kisi, wetonzini samatela, gomgongo wange mukaluba, don't call it chitini. Yeah, we jangu jangu no mati kuwate po. Moto mate mate fanze filoso. Watu sati labo mula mwe we jaga. Telo tuke kubana linda.
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, producer Douglas Impuga and our engineer for today, Al Santos, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a doctor who invoked a storm on his people cannot prevent his house from destruction. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. The United States condemns, in the strongest possible terms, the terrorist attacks that killed over 300 people in Mogadishu. On October 14th, the streets of the Somali capital's Hodan district were jam-packed with traffic and bystanders when a truck loaded with explosives detonated, killing hundreds. Shortly thereafter, a second, smaller explosion, believed to have been part of a coordinated plot with the first attack, took place across town. This attack was the deadliest in Somalia's history. In addition to the more than 300 people killed, over 400 were injured and dozens are still unaccounted for. The two attacks targeted a public, commercial area of the capital and resulted in the death and injury of hundreds of civilians, including United States citizens, said the White House press secretary in a written statement. While Somali citizens and first responders have responded bravely and generously to the attacks, there are still critical humanitarian needs. Starting on October 17th, the United States has begun to deliver plane loads of relief supplies to Mogadishu to assist the victims and survivors. As the White House press secretary noted, the United States extends our deepest condolences and sympathy to the victims, their families, and all those who have suffered from terrorism. The United States stands with the people and government of Somalia in their commitment to defeating these groups, ensuring the security of their people, and rebuilding their country.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.